Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates sits on nearly 10% of the world's oil reserves. It's not an obvious place for a green revolution, but that's exactly what's happening. Over the next decade, a metropolis of 50,000 residents will be built from scratch in the desert. Masdar City will have no carbon footprint. We're taking a tour and going deep into the project and how it could someday change the way we all live. This hour, On Point, the city of the future in the desert. You can join the conversation. Can a country rich by oil lead the way to a greener world? Can you imagine living in a carbon zero, zero waste city in your lifetime? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Before we get started, a big welcome to our newest listeners in Florida, WUFT 89.1 FM in Gainesville and WJUF in Inverness, Florida. We're glad to have you all on board. Welcome. Joining me now from Masdar City in Abu Dhabi is Khalid Awad, Director of Property Development at the Masdar Initiative. He's the man in charge of building the city of Masdar. Khalid Awad, we're delighted to have you join us.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to encourage our listeners right off the bat here to go to our website, onpointradio.org, where you'll find links to the Masdar website and some amazing pictures and videos. Mr. Awad, why is oil-rich Abu Dhabi, of all places, setting up a completely carbon-free city of the future?
Well, that's a very good question, Jane. 30, 40 years ago, Abu Dhabi had no infrastructure. It found oil, and oil brought it to where it is today. It's a very modern city, very developed infrastructure, very comparable to the most advanced cities of the world. However, it came with a big price on the environment. Today, Abu Dhabi is counted as one of the highest carbon footprint cities around the world. And fast-forwarding all this 30 years from now, with more resources at hand, Abu Dhabi must do something, and the best thing it does is it's doing is by developing the way to the future, which is energy-based conversion of the whole society to the green. And I think using the energy knowledge that we have, taking the environmental footprint that Abu Dhabi has and reducing that is what Masdar is about. The initiative is actually targeting a development that will help Abu Dhabi reduce its carbon footprint at an exponential scale.
So I'm looking at an artist rendering of Masdar City. It is so sleek. It kind of looks like something out of a sci-fi movie set, George Jetson meets Mecca, if you will. How would you describe Masdar City, Mr. Awad?
Again, the reason you have these photos, which are the artist's conception of what Masdar City is going to look like, is when we talk about zero carbon, it doesn't mean it will be an ugly place to live in with all the restrictions. So we're trying to communicate the message that it is the quality of life will be at its highest, but the environmental footprint will be at its lowest. So making sure that people will understand that they will have the choice and making their life having a minimum carbon footprint and enjoying life as it should be with the minimum abuse of technology.
So
I think that's the message.
Here's a promotional video for the Masdar Initiative. It lays out the scope of your project.
Imagine a hub of global scientific endeavor where the city itself is a testing ground for the future of humanity. Imagine a place which will be the global center for the future of energy. A place where individuals, companies, and organizations are committed to finding solutions to one of the most pressing issues of our time. Imagine Masdar.
So Global Center for Future of Energy. This is a grand, ambitious plan. Lay it out for us here, if you would, Mr. Awad. Masdar will hold 50,000 people when it's completed. How large is Masdar City? How many square miles?
It's a 6 square kilometers, which is around 4.5 square miles, if I do the conversion right. It's a big area, and we're building already with the first building being the Masdar Institute of Science and Technology in partnership with MIT. And the reason why we will be achieving that zero carbon here in the very harsh environment that we have is because we're going to rely mostly on renewable energy, and we'll be recycling all the waste or reusing it also for energy.
Let me ask you about that those renewables, but speak first about the harsh environment. What kind of conditions are you working under? How hot is it in Abu Dhabi?
It's 130 right now, 125 to 130 with very high humidity. This is the August weather. So we have 4 or 5 months of very hot weather. And then the rest of the year will be very mild weather. Spring and some of the western cities would be very similar to what Abu Dhabi is for 6 to 7 months a year.
So you're using your climate to your benefit. Talk a little bit about the recyclables that you'll be doing. Their strategy of Masdar is to reuse or recycle as much as possible. It permeates your planning. I mean, talk about waste management, water recycling. What are you doing with all of this in the city itself?
Yeah, let's talk about waste for a second. You know, currently most waste in Abu Dhabi goes to landfill. In our strategy, we have no waste going to landfill, so we'll be recycling most of the waste, using some of it for composting, and the rest of it will be actually transferred to energy that will be helping to power the city. As far as water is concerned, today most cities of the world have 30% of the water being wasted through leakage. We're designing the city to have a minimum leakage of water. The maximum limit we have in the city is 5% by design, whereas most cities will design their leakage system and their infrastructure for water at 20%. So that tells you that already in the design there's a lot of saving that's going on in water consumption.
But to that point specifically, doesn't recycling water take a lot of energy in and of itself, especially when you are where you are? You need to bring ocean water in, turn that into drinking water. I mean, doesn't that take a lot of energy in and of itself?
Well, if you use desalination water, yes, but if you start recycling gray water and treat that and reuse it for irrigation and other things that you would be using, we'll be recycling more than 90% of our water, and that will reduce a lot our need for desalinated water from the ocean. So by doing recycling, making sure that we catch all the water that we can get from the system and treat the black one or the water that is not usable to a level that's acceptable for other users in the city, that we'll be saving a lot of that desalinated water.
So Masdar will be the first city, as we mentioned, where there are zero carbon emissions. Talk about the basic structure, the basic engineering of the city, because I'm reading about these narrow streets, shaded walks that are going to reduce the need for air conditioning and what you say, 125, 130 degree heat?
Yes, that's right. When we did the competition for the master plan, we had different architects offering us different versions. Some people said you should build like Venice, you know, with all the water canals, and people should move in water canals to reduce their footprint. The one that really took us by surprise was the one that showed us that sustainability is actually going back to the roots and building on the success of the tradition. And we looked at cities that have survived this weather for hundreds of years, and Arabian cities and Arabian architecture came out as the winner. So the idea by looking at all cities, the idea that we got was based on narrow streets, building shading each other, a defined perimeter for the city, so we minimize the energy dissipation. Having that will create shading for most of the streets. We have oriented the city in a way to reduce the exposure to the sun and maximize the wind infiltration into the city. So these principles that have been very valid for thousands of years have been revived with new technologies, and that's why we use the same principles here in Masdar City.
Capturing the flavor of an ancient Arabic city. What's the cost of all this, Mr. Awan?
The total budget of the city is $22 billion, but that includes...
$22 billion?
Yes, U.S. dollars.
And how far along are you in the process? If I were to come to Masdar right now, what would I see?
You will see five buildings, four-story each, with a big knowledge center, which constitute the Masdar Institute of Science and Technology. You will see all the area around them being built to the podium level, so you can walk from the city edge to the institute, and other buildings around this area are under construction right now. You will also see a 10-megawatt photovoltaic plant, solar plant, that is connected to Abu Dhabi grid for the first time in the whole region, and that's producing power and sending it to our Abu Dhabi grid and offsetting all the carbon that we have been using through construction. You will see also our site offices, which are one of the most sustainable prefab offices for site. And we have a lot of pilots going on. We have a test field for photovoltaics where we have more than 40 different suppliers competing to show that their panels work well and produce that electricity in the weather that we have.
And so who do you hope will be attracted to this kind of environment? I mean, who do you hope is going to live here? Who will work here in this 5 to 6 square mile green city?
This city is, first of all, it's a living laboratory. So all the companies that have technologies that address carbon footprint, sustainable and advanced energy, water, waste, recycling, green construction materials, energy efficiency products, all these companies, you know, the likes like General Electric, who will be our first tenant, and they will have their first eco-imagination center here in Abu Dhabi in Nasser City.
Mm-hmm.
These companies not only will benefit from the fact that the city is actually using their technologies, and it's an excellent place to demonstrate the need for their products, but because of the synergy of having all these companies working together and close to each other and all around the Masdar Institute of Science and Technology, which is focused on research in advanced energy, that will create really a very unique environment. So the synergies, the business synergies, the technology synergies that are going to be provided by that mixture of companies is very unique.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Khaled Awad, Director of Property Management for Masdar City. It's a zero-emission city being built in the desert of Abu Dhabi. Khaled Awad is Director of Property Development at the Masdar Initiative. He joins us from Masdar City in Abu Dhabi. Here's some sound from a promotional video that helps get paint a picture for us of what the city of Masdar will look like when it's finished and how it will function.
Masdar is enclosed by an animated wall, acting like a protective shield and defining it within the surrounding landscape. A landscape where water purification, energy collection, recreation and waste management is afforded alongside research and development.
So, Mr. Awad, it all sounds very interesting, fascinating, and hopefully applicable to a lot of different places around the world. How optimistic are you that this is going to be successful, a totally green city, no cars, no carbon footprint out in the middle of the desert?
Jane, you know, this is the $1 million question. What we have today is a vision and a process to reach there. We haven't achieved the zero carbon emission city today. However, the process is showing to be very productive. The kind of knowledge that we're getting through the process of going there is just unbelievable. The amount of learning that we're going through to get the city to what it should be is really helping not just Masdar City, but the whole Abu Dhabi, which is having a high carbon footprint, as I said, to really quickly catch up with what it should be doing. So if we reach 90% of our goals, we would have done something that it's very unique already and exceptional. However, we're still targeting to have the zero carbon emission by making sure that our demand is minimum, that the city will consume only what it needs, not additional over-design or additional wasted resources mm-hmm. that are available to it. And with that, I think we'll be really showing how it should be or how urban development should be in the future.
What will be the standard of living in Masdar City? I mean, how much of certain amenities, basic amenities are you going to be giving up to live in Masdar?
I mean, it's very similar to any other city. The only thing that we have here in design is what we call social engineering. How can we make the people control their own emission and their own footprint? If we tell them what to do and over-plan for them, they wouldn't react, or they would feel that they're like in a very controlled environment. Giving them the choice is going to achieve much better than what technology is promising us. And I think that idea came out through the whole planning exercise, how to really social engineer this place to give people control over their own footprint. And the best way to do that is by giving them information. Tell them how much they're spending, how much water they're using, how much energy they're consuming, and how much carbon is their footprint by doing that. Mm-hmm. And once we do that, we trust that their behavior will really adjust to better than what we expect.
Let me get a couple of calls in here, Mr. Awad. First from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Moneer is on the line. Moneer, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted first to say hello to Khaled, who I met actually at the World Energy Forum in Abu Dhabi last January. And in fact, I just returned from the Middle East again, which did include a visit to Masdar.
Ah, you've been there.
I've been there. In fact, my company, which is based in Framingham, Mass., is providing the solar-powered outdoor lighting systems there.
And so tell us about what you're actually providing. What are you actually doing there? What are you putting up?
Our systems are photovoltaic-powered systems that use LED lighting, very high-efficient LED lighting, to light the parking lots underneath the car shades and the roadway. Right now, it's just coming into the site offices and lighting that area that Khaled described.
Mm-hmm.
And
so from an engineering perspective, as you see the city as it stands now and what they hope it will be in 2016 when it's finished, how optimistic are you that this can work, that this actually might be a zero carbon city?
Oh, I myself am very optimistic. They are bringing the best and the brightest from across the globe to address this challenge. And a lot of the technology exists. It's a matter of bringing the people together and providing the resources. And that's exactly what Masdar is doing. Mm. They've really brought the spark to the opportunity.
Mm. Moneer, thanks. Thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it. Mr. Awad, how do you make Masdar applicable to cities that already exist? Because many of the approaches at Masdar, such as controlling the orientation of the city, the length of a city street, the height of a building, that sort of thing, those approaches won't work in existing cities, like New York, big cities, Mexico City, that sort of thing. How do you hope that these lessons that Masdar hopefully will teach the rest of the world, how are they applicable to places that already exist?
Jane, let me first say that the design and the architecture of Masdar City doesn't need to be replicated as it is. This is applicable to what Abu Dhabi is. If you're doing the same city and with the same vision in Fort Worth, you'd be designing it completely different. So the design is very applicable to the environment, and I think this is the message. You don't have to replicate exactly what you're doing. It's just having a process, if you're starting from scratch, to follow all these different ways of passive architecture, making sure that you understand that energy efficiency starts by design. But for existing cities, I think a lot of the technologies will be applicable, especially the ones that we're using in buildings, and a lot of them are being used currently in the U.S. and through the Green Building initiatives and the U.S. Green Building Council. But the most important part is the social engineering aspect. How can we get people to behave better than technology and to really exceed our expectations in demand management? Mm. And I think that's going to be applicable for existing and new cities equally. Whether you're in New York or in London, you're already wasting 30% or 40% of your water just in the infrastructure. So whatever you educate people to do, you should first invest in fixing the infrastructure, which is already wasting a lot of resources, a lot of water in this case. Mm. Same applies on waste, and same applies on other things that are used in a bad way in existing cities. So I think the social engineering aspect is going definitely to be used by existing cities, as well as the other technology aspects.
Mr. Awad, hold on just a moment. I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Joining me in the studio is Kevin Bolas. He's energy editor at Technology Review. He reported from Masdar City in 2008. Kevin Bolas, welcome to On Point.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So how unusual is this project, is Masdar, in its scale and complexity?
As far as we know, as far as the scale and complexity go, it's the biggest, the most important in that sense. There have been a lot of projects that do smaller scale things. We know how to do individual houses, small commercial buildings. We can make those zero energy if we want, and we know how to do that. But when we make things much bigger, things get very much more complicated, and it doesn't work as we expect. There's always surprises. And so it's great that we have a project that is scaling things up so we can see what's going to happen and learn from those inevitable surprises.
Environmentalism is a rather new concept in places like Abu Dhabi, is it not? I mean, what is precisely the point of interest here? What is the key piece to learn out of this model, this project?
for everyone else in the rest of the world? What can we learn? Well, one important part is the amount of data that we can get from this. And we can take the information about how the solar panels work, how the lighting systems work, what we were just talking about, and plug them into computer models and make really great simulations. And then we can make predictions on how to make this other places. But the other thing is, if this works, and what I mean by work isn't just achieving the goals of the low carbon emissions, but actually making money at this. If they can actually make money at this, then other developers will take this up, and this will take off in the world. I think that could be the biggest impact worldwide.
Mr. Ahmad, ultimately, you want Masdar to be profitable. Will it be? Might it be?
Definitely. If it's not profitable, the whole project fails. And I think the bottom line here is a noble cause. That's the difference between this project and other projects.
Let's go back to the phones. Edward is calling now. He's in Omaha, Nebraska. Edward, welcome to the program.
Hello. How you doing?
Hi. Go ahead. Welcome.
Yes, I was wondering, my question is, are they taking into account the carbon that's going to be accumulated in the process of building this? In other words, is the gamble worth the overall carbon that we're having to deal with right now? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Edward, thank you very much. Mr. Ahmad, what about the carbon that goes into the production of the making of the city itself? What about that?
You know, when we defined the zero carbon emission, we mentioned that the city will not emit carbon. However, once when we want to build it, we have to use existing materials and use the carbon or consume carbon. But even with that, we have reduced our carbon footprint tremendously compared to other cities in the region. All our reinforced steel is recycled steel. Our concrete is going to have 70% waste material in it. So we're already taking a lot of measures to reduce that carbon in the materials itself. And once this is built, we will also try to offset it through excess energy that we send to the grid, green energy, and other measures that will be offsetting the total carbon that is going to be used through the city. Hmm. But you can't avoid it today if you want to build anything to have some carbon in it. And the best way what you can do is make sure you influence your supply chain to reduce their carbon footprint. And we did restrict a lot of these companies. For example, aluminium was banned in the city until we got aluminium suppliers to come and tell us we'll be using 85% recycled aluminium. Mm. And this change is really very visible in Abu Dhabi now with what we're doing.
Mm. Does that sound right to you, Kevin Bullis? The amount of carbon that will be used to produce the city, does it make it worth it?
I think it does, because we need someone to build this so we know how to build cities in the future. And we think about what's going on in India and China right now. They're building a lot. This building is going to happen, and we need to have an example that says, here's how you can do it. Here's how it can work.
So places like China could especially benefit from the Masdar model, given that they're going from the ground up.
Exactly, exactly. It's not the same in Manhattan, but in China, this could really help.
Back to the phones. Brent is on the line. He's in North Haverhill, New Hampshire. Brent, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
My question is, how is the project being underwritten?
Okay. Who's funding it? Brent, thanks very much for the call. Mr. Ahmad, how is this project being underwritten? Who's paying for it?
The seed capital is coming from Abu Dhabi government. This is the main funder for the project right now. We have project finance going on project by project. For example, the institute is being leased to the Northern Institute of Science and Technology, and that is taking care of the first project finance. And other buildings coming online will have leases, and these leases will be financed through banks for the time being. That's the current strategy for the first phase.
Is this going to work in governments that necessarily can't afford it, Kevin Bullis?
Well, capital is always an issue, especially these days. That's why it's important for this to prove itself as an economic success. And then the financing, hopefully, will be able to come.
Does Masdar's location, Khalid Ahmad, limit its applicability? I mean, we talked about this a little bit as it relates to cities that already exist. But what about climates and climate differences? What works in the middle of a hot, dry, sunny climate won't necessarily be applicable in places like, you know, where we are in New England. How do you account for that difference?
Yeah, I mean, if you can build it in Abu Dhabi, you can build it anywhere. And because of the weather that we have. But a lot of the practices that we have, that we're using, are very applicable in places like Scandinavia. We're insulating buildings, making sure that building energy efficiency is at its maximum. So these things are applicable in a very cold weather as well. And any harsh environment, insulation in buildings and insulation in, on a city level is needed. Demand reduction is needed. So all these principles will be applicable anywhere you go. I mean, in moderate climate, you don't need all these measures, but you can still build easily without without these measures and achieve the targets that you're aiming for.
What about that, Kevin Bullis? You've been to Masdar. I mean, do you see what works in the middle of the desert working in cooler climates?
Well, there obviously are very big differences. And actually, if you were going to build a test city, you would not put it in Abu Dhabi. There are a couple of things that are very different there, not just the high temperatures and extreme humidity, but you've got a lot of sun. Solar is going to work a lot better there than it's going to work in a lot of other places in the world. The other big problem with Abu Dhabi is you don't have fresh water. You have to use energy to get clean water out of the ocean. And there are some experts that are very concerned that that will make this a showstopper, that that will make it too expensive to do this in Abu Dhabi. That could be a problem. I mean, that could be one of the reasons why it doesn't succeed. And if it looks like this is a way that if it looks to developers like this is going to cost them a lot of money, then maybe it'll slow down renewable energy.
Back to the issue of water, Mr. Awad. Is it a showstopper, this issue of fresh water and needing it and the energy used to make it? Is that something that's going to slow this project down?
As I said, any project in Abu Dhabi today uses 100% new water from the ocean, in the whole region, actually, not just in Abu Dhabi. And what we're doing is having a maximum recycling factor and reuse of the water. So we'll have to catch and treat most of the water we'll be consuming, and that by that we'll be reducing the water consumption to a minimum. Instead of a current 350 liters per person per day, we're aiming at 80 liters per person per day as total water. So we're already aiming for around 25% at most of what people consume here in Abu Dhabi using recycling and the technologies of leakage reduction and that I mentioned. So that alone will take care of a lot of the water that would have been used otherwise. Now, reducing that desalination process is currently not possible, but that's why we're piloting different projects with different companies on desalinating very high saline, hypersaline groundwater, mm-hmm. and then reusing the salt into industrial processes. Mm-hmm. And this water, the desalination process, could use actually the waste heat that we use in cooling. So if we can integrate all these things together, there's a huge opportunity of saving the energy that you're referring to.
Kevin Bullis, you talk. Excuse me, Mr. Awad. Kevin Bullis, you talk about the one issue, water, being a potential showstopper. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of other issues that are potential stumbling blocks in this project. What if Masdar fails? What does that do to the renewable energy movement as a whole?
It's hard to say how much of an impact it will have, and it won't completely fail. One of the points here is that we want to learn ways that things don't go right. We want to learn from these things, and in that way, it could help other projects. I think it's a matter of about degree. How fast do other developers take up this kind of thing? If it makes a lot of money, it'll grow quickly. If it doesn't, that could slow it down. But it's not going to fail completely. There's a lot of money, a lot of intelligent people working on this.
What is your end game, Mr. Awad? When will Masdar be finished?
Well, it's this nice question, when the city will be finished. No city will ever be finished. Cities will always be built, and it's a continuous process. We're saying that in the next 8 to 10 years, we'll have a huge part of the city, which is construction completed, but that doesn't mean the city will be finished. And the process of building the city will never finish, actually. There will be always a way to make it better and to improve the energy demand of the city and increasing the supply of energy to the grid.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Masdar, the city of the future, which hopes to be the world's first zero-carbon, zero-waste city. My guests this hour are Khalid Awad. He's director of property development at the Masdar Initiative. He joins us from Masdar City in Abu Dhabi. And with me in the studio, Kevin Bullis, energy editor at Technology Review. He's visited and written about the Masdar project. You can link to his article at our website, onpointradio.org. Well, renewable energy goals are high for Masdar, and I wanted to listen a bit here to some of Masdar's promotional video.
Mazda will be the first city where carbon emissions are zero, where waste is converted to energy and reduced to zero. The need for desalinated water production is reduced by 75%, and 80% of water will be recycled.
So we've talked about water and waste and all the recycling there. Mr. Awad, what about transportation? No cars in the planning in Masdar City. Instead, you have something called a personal rapid transit system.
Yeah.
What is that?
The strategy is actually to have a carbon-free transportation system. And we used the concept of the elevators. Like you had buildings without elevators in the past, you introduced the elevator, and then this is how it is. We are trying to introduce something like the person rapid transit system that you just mentioned, which is taking people from point to point. So they park their car at the outskirts of the city. They take that pod, which is a 4 to 6 passenger electric vehicle, driverless, and then they go to the destination they want to go to the city. And the maximum time they have to wait for that car to be available to them, it's 3 minutes, and the maximum distance they have to wait to walk in the city to reach any station which where they can take that that pod is around 300 meters. So it's very convenient. It will avoid traffic. It will avoid waiting to find a car parking space, and it is much more productive.
A driver.
At the same time, the biggest factor for transportation is to make the city walkable, so people can walk without being stopped by cars or traffic.
Mm. A driverless car powered by solar energy with batteries, as I've read. Kevin Bullis, what are the implications of the transportation system in Masdar that's planned?
Well, the personal rapid transit system could be very important for green cities in the United States, actually, in the future. One of the bad things about mass transit is that when you have a bus that's empty, it's just not very efficient. It takes a lot of diesel to push that down the road. If you have a PRT system, this personal rapid transit system, what it does is it allows you to have, in times of low demand and in places where there isn't a whole lot of demand for mass transit, these small vehicles that are very efficient that can bring people into the main hubs for mass transit. So this is a way of making mass transit systems much more efficient in the future.
Right, but again, that works in a 4 to 5 square mile city. But how is this applicable to a larger scale city?
Right. Well, the idea here, a PRT system works best in a pretty small area. And so you could use it in new developments. You could use it on university campuses and medical campuses where you can put this thing. There's actually a kind of version of this going on already in Morgantown, West Virginia, at a university there. So
let's go back to the phones. James in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. Welcome to the program, James. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
My question was, who is going to live in this city that's being built? Is it just going to be a bunch of engineers, or is everyday people going to live there? And then how will they, you know, sustain their life with normal jobs? Is it all going to be created?
James, good question. Mr. Awad, what about James's question? I asked a little bit earlier, but will it be engineers? Are these super wealthy people? Will they live in the city? Are these everyday folks? Who will be living here, actually?
I mean, the city is going to attract businesses first, and the employees in these businesses will have first access to the residential area. So you'd like to live close to where you work, so you'll be, your business or your house will be at a walking distance from your work. So the people working in these companies will have a preferential rate for all the residential space that's built in the city. As I mentioned, the city will be having residential areas and business areas and R&D space. So it's the employees working here, the people, the workers, the managers will be actually living in the city.
Mm. Orna is on the line. She's in Sharon, Massachusetts. Orna, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hello, James.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I would like to ask Mr. Awad to tell us about the school system in Masdar City. I understand that Masdar is the city of the future. Is the school system going to use the same principles he mentioned as conservation, green energy in education too?
Mm-hmm. Orna, thank you. What about the school system in Masdar City, Mr. Awad? What might it look like?
Absolutely. I mean, the school is an integrated place. We have three schools. The first one is going to be designed very soon. It's an integrated place of what we're doing for the employees of the city, their children, and their people living there. And the city is actually designed to be a green the school is going to be designed to be a green school. But even in the curriculum, we're introducing with the operator of the school, we're discussing with different operators now, how to really educate the people and the students about sustainability, about water conservation, about the use of energy. What does it mean to really be energy efficient? How does it impact their lives? And this is starting even with Abu Dhabi schools outside Masdar City. So we're starting our educational campaigns with schools there, asking children to draw a Masdar for us. What do they see in Masdar? How do they understand and perceive Masdar in the future? Mm-hmm. And we're doing so much work with the Education Council to educate the students about what's happening in Masdar City.
And it's not just lower school education, Kevin Bullis. The Masdar Initiative is, there's a Masdar Institute as well, is there not? What is that? Students are starting there next month.
Well, I could talk about this as well in more detail, but the basic idea is that if you're going to be having a green city, what a better place to have research going on into actually different ways of making renewable cities of the future. My understanding is it doesn't just include solar panels. It includes nuclear, which is also another kind of zero emissions kind of energy.
What do you hope that the Masdar Institute might teach its students, Mr. Awad?
Well, the institute is a graduate school, so it's for postgraduate education, mm-hmm. Masters and PhD, and they have different master's programs that will be starting next month, as you mentioned, in water and the environment, and mechanical engineering, information technology, and other and engineering systems. And all these are focused on research. Around the advanced energy and sustainability systems and technologies. Yeah. We already have more than 25 research projects jointly with MIT currently going on, and some of these are going to start in Abu Dhabi very soon. Yeah. The most important part of this, that the students will have in their residence smart appliances for the first time ever, smart fridges, smart stoves in their houses, and they'll be helping us understand how these things function. How can we really use this information to reduce the demand of the city? So the institute not only is going to emit the knowledge that they, through research, but it's going to help us understand more about the use of the buildings and how they actually operate efficiently.
Mr. Awad mentions the smart stoves and these other appliances. Maybe these students have greater incentive to use them and to understand the practicality of them, Kevin Bullis. But we talk about the social engineering. Getting people to change their behavior in this way is very difficult, and I know you wanted to speak to that as it relates to Masdar.
Yeah, even students, even people who are very enthusiastic about changing, sometimes the changes don't last. We have examples of places with the National Renewable Energy Lab in Golden, Colorado has studied new buildings that are designed to be as efficient as possible, having things as simple as windows that open and let ventilation in, and a little sign on the wall that lights up and tells people to open the windows when it's cool outside so you don't have to use the air conditioning. And they work fine for a year, and then after a year, even these highly motivated people stop doing it. They start ignoring the sign altogether.
Go back to their old ways.
So it's really tricky. If you rely too much on this kind of social engineering to reach your goals, it might not last.
Another call from Nick. He's in Heartland, Vermont. Nick, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering how economically feasible would this idea of a zero carbon city be for normal people in terms of not only housing, how much would that cost, but food and other necessities of life.
Basic cost of living, Mr. Awad. Next question. How expensive would it be to live in Masdar? The cost of housing, food, et cetera?
Well, first of all, it should be as it is in Abu Dhabi. There's no premium to be in Masdar City, so it's as affordable as it is in Abu Dhabi. The most important part is what is the price of carbon that you're emitting if you're outside Masdar City and how much we're saving by being part of this. If the price of carbon is zero, then Masdar City is equally expensive or is equally cheap than any other place in the region. But if the price of carbon is a certain number, then Masdar City is cheaper and much more affordable for everybody to live in. Mm.
Agree with that, Kevin Bullis? Cheaper, much more affordable?
Well, it could be. I think one of the biggest important things to do here is to reduce energy use. If it costs five times more to use solar power, then I believe that's what it is in Abu Dhabi, then to use the natural gas plants that are there, then you need to use a fifth the energy. If you do that, maybe it can be affordable, but it's a big challenge.
Jim is on the line from Penyon, New York. Jim, welcome to On Point.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah. I guess this is a comment. You know, I've lived in the Emirates for 10 years, and I can tell you that environmental consciousness is very small, and there's virtually no recycling, you know, where I live. And so I'm wondering if the Emirates want, and this is my comment, I guess, if the Emirates want to reduce their carbon footprint, why not start a program of education for ordinary Emiratis, you know, and other people, other populations living in the country, so that this would be, I think, a cheaper way of reducing the carbon footprint, and it would, of course, harmonize with the goals of Masdar.
Mm. So. Jim, thank you very much. Mr. Awad, how would you respond to the caller's comments?
This is happening as we speak. Education, I mean, part of the Masdar work is to have educational campaigns all over the place. We're working with the environmental agency locally here. We're doing so much work to get the green building standards up and running. So this is happening. There is a huge education effort going on in Abu Dhabi right now, not just what Masdar City is about. But what Abu Dhabi is doing is instead of talking about it and just educating and as Kevin was mentioning, just putting a banner on the wall about how to do things, they're actually doing it. So showing by doing is a very powerful message that Abu Dhabi is trying to develop through Masdar City.
Is it true in Masdar that the city is being developed in modules, one neighborhood at a time, so as each section is constructed, the successes or mistakes of that particular module are cataloged and then looking for the application for the next neighborhood that's going to be built. Is that right?
Absolutely. And the reason why we're doing it, because also you want to make sure that the neighborhood, people living in this neighborhood will not feel that they are in the middle of a construction site. Mm. So the neighborhood will be self-sufficient for people, and also we'll learn so much. And phasing will allow, future-proofing will allow us to understand better what can be done instead of just rolling the whole technologies throughout the city.
Mm. Here's a call from Kelly in Brattleboro, Vermont. Kelly, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks. I think this is a great topic. I wanted the planners to talk a little bit more about food supply once people are living in the city. How will you reduce the carbon footprint of incoming food?
Mm. Kelly, thanks. What about the incoming food supply, Mr. Awad?
We have developed with our logistics partners a system whereby we'll have a tracking of the food supply chain. So what we'll be providing is the information so people can come to the retail store, supermarket, and check the carbon footprint. So like you read on your products, what's your fat or your calories, you'll be reading also the carbon footprint of each product. That's something that we're planning to have. But the food will be similar. I mean, there is nothing different than any other place. The only difference is that you'll have the information about the footprint of the food you're buying, and you'll have a more intelligent choice to make at that time. In addition to that, we have we expect 10 to 20% of the food to come from within the city. So that's why we're focusing on some organic plantation in the city and having some fruits and vegetables available in the city, green fingers or the green space that we have around the city.
Hmm. Here's Peggy. She's in Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the program.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just listening to all the callers, and I'm just blown away at how negative so many of the questions are and how cynical they are about this concept. And I can only think that Walt Disney would be in heaven to hear that we are building Tomorrowland.
So you think it might work? You think you're optimistic about this, Peggy?
If it's 40% effective, it is further ahead than anything we've done. It's generating technologies. It's providing a test lab on a large scale so that we can develop technologies that in the long run I hope will bring us to a carbon-free environment or at least decrease our carbon footprint. So I'm very excited about it, and I wish everyone involved a lot of luck. And I wish I were a scientist or an engineer and I could move there.
Peggy, thanks so much for the call. Kevin Bullis, you write that the Masdar initiative is part of an ambitious plan, you say, to transform a resource-based economy, third largest exporter of oil in the world, into a knowledge and expertise-based economy.
Yeah, Abu Dhabi's been hit hard in the past, actually. It used to depend on the pearl trade. And when a technological advance came along and made it possible to do cultured pearls, that totally wiped it out and devastated the economy. They don't want that to happen again. And this might be a way of doing it. Who knows?
Mr. Khalid Awad, as you look out onto Masdar, you're there now. When you see what's gone up so far and what might come, what do you personally perceive? What goes through your mind?
One thing about Abu Dhabi, it has been emitting carbon more than any place in the world per person. Mm-hmm. I think Abu Dhabi is now aiming at emitting knowledge, and that change is big. For a city that is really having such a big footprint, carbon footprint, to make that effort and that step to change, I think is huge. And the knowledge that's going to be emitted from here, instead of carbon this time, is going to help the whole world. And in addition to that, on a personal level, this is the most exciting job I would ever dream of. The people that are with me are thinking the same. So if you come to Masdar, you would feel this passion and real interest in being part of something so aggressive but at the same time so interesting and exciting, not just because we're building something new and technologically attractive, but it's because it has a mission. Mm. And that mission is keeping everybody working day and night.
Masdar City, no cars, no waste, no gas, no oil, 50,000 people, 5 square miles. It is quite a concept. Khalid Awad from Masdar City in Abu Dhabi, thank you very much for your time, sir, and good luck.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And Kevin Bullis here in the studio, energy editor at Technology Review. Appreciate your insights. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast listeners at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.